and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. I am joined by a new voice to Fool's Daily, but not a new voice to the world of podcasting. If you listen to SMP Radio, you'll recognize him as the main host, the man who holds it all together. I'm joined by Mr. No, it's not Oz, even with that laugh. I'm joined by Mr. Benjamin Crowe.
Hello, everyone.
Whoa, what did you just do?
I got excited and knocked psych over. Oh dear. Hello Mike, how you doing?
I'm alright. Right. There'll be people listening to this who have no clue that you are the UK's number one and therefore probably best in the world Malifaux player.
I'll settle King of the South, to be honest. That's fine.
It's King of the South. So yeah. What's your gaming history, Ben?
Gaming history. Oh, I'll do a quick one. I probably started playing the old Games Workshop when I was about 14. So that was mainly Fantasy. Lizardmen and Dwarfs, my big love. And then I sort of dipped in and out as I went through school and upwards. And I sort of hit a peak probably about three, four years ago where I just got a bit disinterested with GW. Not just because of everyone moans about their policy sometimes, but it's just, I don't know, I just got a bit tired of the game system, so I looked around and I found Malifaux and loved that. And then I realized there's lots of other game systems. When you get blind, as you probably well know, as you get blinded by a game system, you sometimes stick with one. But I found Malifaux, and then that sort of led into other ones, which is hopefully one of the ones we're going to sort of talk about today. But I sort of dabbled in things like War Machine, although if anyone's listened to either Isle of Foe or SMP knows my love in brackets for it, and sort of dabbled with Infinity and stuff like that, and dropped on Commander recently. But recently I've really got the hankering for this a new game that came out, well, kickstarted recently, wasn't it, The Wrath of Kings.
Yeah, so people who listen to the show regularly will have already heard Conrad and I witter at length about Wrath of Kings, but of course you have a big advantage over us in that you've actually played a game.
Well, me and Oz managed to, he's the other half of Isle of Foe, now has joined me on SMP. Well, I say join me, he's the main tech guy behind it. You probably recognise his voice as he chuckles. Interestingly, actually, if just a quick boring jump back, obviously when the Kickstarter came round, we both went in for a game called Ark World. And around the same time, Wrath of Kings was going. I think it lasted a little bit longer past it. I put my money into Ark World at the time, and he did both that and Wrath of Kings. And another fellow from our club backed Wrath of Kings. And as it closed down, it was too late for me to get into it, and I was absolutely gutted. And then he gave me a second chance to come round, but as you know, life kicks in, and there's other things to purchase this. And I, again, missed any chance for it. And as it sort of built up, and obviously listened to Fool's Daily and stuff, people talking about Wrath of Kings, I was like, oh. So I just kept looking at it, and I think I was more in tune than Oz was, who was backing it, than, you know, I mean, I was paying much more attention to it. And when it landed, I was desperate to get hold of some, so I managed to get a bit of the Hadros, the basic Kickstarter set, plus this one, the specialist octopus unit. I think it's the Oskrund Cavalry or whatever, I can't say it properly.
Right.
And the special characters that came with it. I got them off a fellow from your way, Scott Porter. So I've been trying to put that stuff together, and me and Austin, our first game yesterday, it was only a little small intro game, just obviously it was kind of, I've read the rules once before through, but it was kind of like reading the rules as we played. So we played an intro game, which I believe, from the top of my head, is 2 rank 1 leaders, 12 infantry, yep, rank 1, and 2 specialists, rank 1. But then obviously you can upgrade them by swapping 2 rank 1s for a rank 2.
Yeah.
As you probably read the rules. So what did I take? I took 6 deep men. I just wanted to sort of take the basic stuff that seemed to be, without going too frills. I took 6 deep men infantry, 3 Severidan, the weird, squiddy little jelly-headed things. Both of their rank 1 leaders. I took a deep cooler, and I took the big crabby thing that you can get the main guy with it. And Oz had, is it Technis?
The pig guys.
Yeah, the pig guys. Yeah, they're actually, do you know what? When I first looked at them, I was like, oh, why is he getting them? They look awful. But the more I've looked at them, the more I like them, actually. In fact,
the figures are really nice.
They are. I tell you what, as the more I've looked at everything, the more I've, like, I really didn't like the Naysir at all originally. But reading the fluff, like, obviously, I'm not going to compare it to some of the other game systems that have been around a while, but I don't know if you had a chance to read any of the fluff, but the actual story that goes through the rulebook, I really enjoyed it, actually. It's basically this, like, intrigue and political backstabbing until it builds up to the sort of the finale, as it was. And each one's kind of got, like, a main character from one of the factions, sort of, as it focuses on. So yeah, that sort of made me really like a lot of the factions more than I thought I would have. As I said, like, I really like the Nasir and Shao Han.
Yeah, the Japanese ones. Yeah,
yeah, they're pretty groovy as well. So he ran. What did he have? He again had. He had six of the union workers, which is the big pig guys. He had six of the linemen, so the basic humans. He had their respective leaders. He had the Galvanic Defender, which is that crazy-looking, rabbity creature thing.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, and then the really distressing Zalak thing, which is like an octopus with like a child sort of bound to it. It's like a spirit thing. It was an interesting game. We mucked up the start. We both set up. He sort of took one flank. I took sort of the middle and a side of a flank. And then he was like, oh, I haven't deployed my... my schemes as well, not schemes, my markers for my sort of...
Right, I was going to ask you whether you'd played with the motivations and stuff.
So, yeah, so we looked at, he had seven morale, I had six, so the way you work morale is you add up all the figures you have in your faction, you divide that number by three, I think round and down, and then you add up all your leaders. So he had seven, I had six of morale, and then we chose our, as you just said, he went for basically a treasure hunt mission where he had two 40 mil markers in the middle of the board and he just had to get to them. And I chose, I think it's on the greed section. It's basically, I had to go into, it might be vengeance. I had to get into his crew, his faction, kill as much as I could with infantry models. And they got markers every time I killed one. Then I had to get into his, because interestingly, they don't have the deployment zones for the game, which is quite different and interesting, I thought. You have sections, don't you? You have like band A, B, C, D, no man's land, D, C, B, A, etc. And depending on your unit type, depends where you can deploy.
Yeah, I thought that was quite an interesting way to deploy, because it just gives them another flexibility on stats.
Yeah.
So you can have infiltrators and things, and it's in the core rules. You basically say you're a deployment D type and you can go there.
Yeah, it kind of speeds the game up a little bit, because obviously the first turn of any game is obviously positional, and this potentially first turn of the game could just see just anarchy kicking off straight away if you wanted to play that way in the game. But yeah, it does. It allows for a little more flexibility. The problem we had, as I said, though, he then deployed his markers, and on first turn he got to both of the markers, which basically put me down by four morale at the start, end of turn one. So that was a mistake on our part, so we should have... put the markers down first, and I could have deployed in a more defensive way, I suppose. But no, we still managed to. I thought that was going to be the game just ruined. We'd have to re-rack, but we persevered and we managed to get enough of the other mechanics of the actual game. You know, sort of the combat, looking at the. So when you choose your faction, your army. I'm going to have to get away from the Malifaux speak here. I have to apologise.
I don't know what it's going to be. I mean.
I don't, because it's that size, isn't it? It's not like a Warhammer army size or a Sargon size. It's not a crew faction, because it's, you know, 12, it's actually 14, 15 models minimum, really, potentially, unless you go
Warband, maybe.
Maybe Warband. We'll try Warband for now and see how that goes. So when you choose your Warband, you choose one guy as your leader, and then I believe everyone in your warband gets his training ability, as it was. Even if he dies, they all have his training ability. I think Oz went with his lineman boss, which I can't remember his ability, but my one, I went with the Deepman leader. It basically meant if I wasn't engaged with model at the end of their sort of movement thing, they could push 3 inches towards a model with this effect called Resonate. So people who sort of play Malifaux, which is obviously not everyone who listens to this, but Resonate's kind of a little bit like Brilliance. It doesn't do a huge amount, but it allows my stuff to do things to them. So it gives them more buffs and makes my troops sort of get extra rerolls or maybe a bit more defensive against them. It sort of helps my stuff out. And if I killed someone with Resonate, I could move 3 inches and take another action, which, as you can imagine, ends up being quite a sort of trundling through if you're quite lucky with your dice rolls and stuff. But yeah, so it was an interesting game, actually. As I said, we got through maybe 4 turns in the end, before sort of we got kicked out of the club, because, as you can imagine, it's our first game, so it was a bit slower than maybe it should have been. But it was really cool. I took the Severodon, the ones that the guys, I quite like them because they look a little bit cool. They're about the way, but as any games if you play when you're first learning it, I realised my big crab guy had an ability that he basically called hitch a ride, and anyone in base contact, you go, right, hitch a ride, that's my action use, then I'm going to walk, because the game rolls around two phases. You manoeuvre and then act, or you can act then manoeuvre. So it's quite a simple process. And it sort of allows you to pull a load of models up that potentially haven't activated, so you can sort of move them up a bit further, which would have really helped me with the treasure markers. But unfortunately, I hadn't put anyone next to him, so that was really that was set up for the turn two. But yeah, it was an interesting. I kind of picked it up because I wanted a second game because I play Malifaux as my main game, and I kind of wanted a second game that was like. I don't want to say the word beer and pretzels, but a game where I don't have to put too much effort into everything. Like, you've looked at the rules, and I think the rule, we joked about the club, I think they're like 18 pages long, maybe 20 pages long for the rule book, which is quite a small rule book. But in a way, that's kind of a beauty for me in some ways, because that means there isn't a huge amount to have to remember. And then obviously the tactics. It's a little bit like X-Wing, the way the tactics are on the cards and in the way you position your stuff, if that makes sense. Doesn't look in the rules itself like a horrendous amount of tactical interactions required. It's going to, all the stuff's kind of on the cards and the way the models move around the board and the way you sort of plan your attacks rather than the rules are that too in depth, which coming from a foe background, putting down like 4 bits of terrain and not having to worry too much about how you interact with that terrain into the same scale was a bit of a different one for me. But no, I really enjoyed it. I'm looking, me and Oz are really booked in. I'm going away for a week, but when we get back, we're going to try the skirmish level out, which is the one up. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to having a go on that one.
Cool. So, how did you find that the game played overall? I mean, was it an intuitive pickup for you?
Definitely. It was, like I said, it's really simple. You decide, it's got an I go, you go maneuvering. So I move model, you move model. But it's also got a thing called combined activation. So you can either activate one model or you can do a combined activation. And that literally just means your leader, you have a number after his leadership value, which I believe is set by the game size. And that says how many models of the same type can activate at once. So I'm say, for instance, I had a Deepman leader. Now he could have activated, I believe, because he was my leader, he could activate 5 people. So that could be 4 other Deepmen and himself. It could be 5 Deepmen, or he could activate some Severodon, as long as he didn't activate with them because he didn't have the same trait as them. And that allowed you to almost sort of bunch up a load of models at once and just sort of sweep across in like a big rallying cry, as it was. And also you could play with that idea, because the way it works is with activations, obviously with the Ugo Igo system, once one guy's finished all his activations, you may have, say if my opponent had finished all his activations, I may have had 2 or 3 more guys left over. Now, I only get 1 more activation, I believe, if I remember rightly from the rules. You only get 1 more activation after your opponent finishes. So you can sort of put a load of your models going at once to sort of force them to maybe activate more at once, or you can maybe end their turn quicker because they have no chance to activate everyone. If that makes any sense.
Okay.
So you
found that pretty straightforward and easy to pick up, that bit?
Yeah, it was...
So I was just reading the rules, that seems to be that whole sort of combined activation thing seems to be, I mean, it's really the crux of the game.
Yeah. And it's really it's enjoyable. And it is literally, you just go, right, these five guys, they're all within 6 inches of my leader. They're all going to activate together. So then they all move, and then they all do the action. Or they all do their action, and then move. So they've all got a complete... Obviously, you can't sort of move, do an action, then finish a movement off. You basically got to complete your maneuver, which is just like a walk, and then do your action, or, you know, like vice versa. But they've all got to do the same thing first, and then complete their actions, or vice versa. So it's very simple process, and it's just like, obviously, anytime, like choosing when you do those act, you know, when is that combined activation useful? You know, you might want to put one guy out there just to lull, you know, lure a few people in, then swamp him in a combined activation. Or you might want to, like I said, force your opponent's activations by activating loads of your models at once, so they know that they, if they're not careful, they're gonna miss out on activating someone because you've managed to use all your stuff really quick, you know, in a fewer activations. Which is enough, you know. That's an interesting way of doing it, because Oz had an incident on turn two. He had his little Zalak thing, and he'd moved up first turn, and before he knew it, I'd finished all my activations, and because I had less models. Anyway, he didn't get to activate him, and he was, you know, that's quite, I believe, a relatively powerful piece. I didn't get to see what he actually did in combat because he died the next turn. I made sure I hit him hard enough, but. I quite enjoyed it. Like I said, it was weird looking at the stats because they're a bit different, and trying to work out what the rolling, because obviously they've got the defense chart down the side, and I've made a mistake with that. Like, they all have, like, there's one called Sundering, which turns one of the armor icons into a lightning strike.
Yeah.
Now, what that literally, I believe, means, I could be wrong, but this is what we sort of discussed. You, for instance, say if you have the armor icon on a 4, and a 3, if you roll a 4, it turns into a lightning strike, say. So it's a hit. But if you roll a 3, then it's still an armor. Does that make sense? It's still an armor?
Yeah, it turns... I've seen that package in the rule... I've actually seen that passage in the rule book. And it turns the highest one on the chart into the other icon.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're exactly right. The 4 would become a... it's not like you can go, aha, I've hit you on a lightning strike and, you know, I've hit you on a thing and then I move it to this. It's if you get the number of the highest one that's on that sheet.
Yeah. See, the first time around we played it the other way and I was like, hang on, no, that's wrong. It's like we just discussed. And that's just quite fun. It's like, oh, so I hit you on a 3, 7, 8, 9, and 10, which is quite a weird thing to have in your head. Do you know what I mean? But I miss on a 4, 5, 6. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
As I said, I don't know how... I don't want to, like, poo-poo the game this early on because I've only had, like, half a game. I don't know how in-depth tactically it's going to give any challenges, but that's honestly not the reason why I picked it up. I'm hoping it's going to be a relatively simple and very fun game that I can just sort of play and not worry too much. Like, I tried doing that War Machine, but because the involvement of it, you can't just sort of, if you want to have... you know, games, you kind of got to have a good knowledge of what you're doing, really. Whereas I'm hoping this game's going to be sort of, with the smaller rule book and the way it is, I'm hoping you could sort of have the Havre models like you got from Kickstarter, maybe a few other extras, but and have some good games and have a relatively level playing field whenever you play people. I don't know, maybe there is more, maybe I'm being a bit blinded about this, but I'm hoping that's the sort of game niche it's going to fit for me anyway.
Yeah, and did you enjoy it enough that you would look out, you know, search out the other figures that you haven't got for that faction? I mean, that's the sort of the golden test is: would you spend more money on it?
Yeah, I'm already. You say this now. I was looking online today to see when the release date was because I want to get another of the octopuses. Not that I've used them, but I just really like them. And the octopus, I think, which I said earlier, is the Oxgrind Kraken or whatever, I don't know, rider thingy, cavalier, blah, blah, blah. It's got like two alternate sort of ways of putting it together. So I was like, oh, definitely want two of them now then. So I can have two of them running around. And I really want the Deepman Frenzies, or just the Frenzies, the shark guys.
Right.
So I really want them to. And part of me is already looking at, oh, maybe down the line I'll get a second faction just to sort of play with as well. Just because I really think the models are lovely, and for I believe they're Restic, they're actually not too bad to put. They're not a nightmare to put together like some of the other.
They're all right. Did your ones have a lot of? You're probably the wrong person to ask this, given that you at the weekend when we were talking, you went, there are five stages to painting.
That's legitimate. That is definitely legitimate. Yeah,
Did you find that they, you know, have you got a lot of mould lines on yours? Because my ones have got, you know, next to no mould lines.
I have found it's been hit or miss. I've had some which have been a little bit annoying with mould lines, and others have been pretty much clean. But then, when I say a little bit, there is a bit, but then obviously I've been sport with Malifaux recently. But if I think back to the lovely Dead Zone stuff I got, and I say lovely in the most sarcastic air quotes ever, and some of the War Machine stuff, it's 10 times better than that stuff for mould lines. It's just generally what feels almost like just generally quality, I think. I actually thought the miniatures are really nice. I thought really nice. And the quality, yeah, I was impressed with it. Although saying that, a bit hypocritical now, when I put the Octopus guy together, one of the formats required a bit of, like, one of the sort of ways of putting it together required or will require some green stuff in. But to be honest, you know.
Yeah, no, I found that as well. The alternate poses, because one of the things the Kickstarter did was got you alternate poses to miniatures.
Yeah.
And the alternate poses, they're not quite as well designed as the original one. It's, you know, you can tell for certainly one of my werewolf guys, you can tell that it was, that pose was sort of hacked together.
Okay.
And you know, there are some little gaps and things, but I found that once I trimmed the big pegs down that they use, then you could get a much better fit. But there is a little bit that needs some green stuffing, but not a massive amount.
It's not. And I think when you get spoiled with stuff, like you said, You get not lazy, but you sort of don't use green stuff. But that was such a commonplace, you know, a few years back when you had to use, especially when they did the crappy metal with plastic thing for a while. And sometimes the metal, you know, require a bit of green stuff in.
Yeah.
In fact, if you think back to, again, if you don't play the Huggy situation, he needed some green stuff as well, didn't
he? Yeah. He did. Yeah.
So how did you find your models?
They went together beautifully. I mean, I put them all together in like over a period of a couple of days, and then I had to wait until I decided what basing I was going to do, and that always takes me ages. But in the end, I decided to use cobblestone bases.
Nice.
And I found the pegs that the models are on really useful then, because I was able to just drill holes for the pegs and then, you know, without having to drill and pin
the other way around. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's the only thing I've been a bit thrown, because obviously the bases have got a deeper bit, haven't they?
Yeah.
But I believe that's...
Did you get the base inserts with the stuff you bought from Scott?
No, I don't know if you got any. You didn't say anything about them. But I've got a plan. I've got a load of water effects. I'm going to see if I can... this is how bad a modeler I am. I'm going to see if I can put, like, a basic bit on the bottom and just fill it with water effects so it looks like it's flooded, and see if that works.
Oh, no, that will work. That will look good with those, and especially if you, like, chop some of them off a little bit.
So hopefully...
You know, take some of them off at the knees and put them in, because it'll look like they're coming out of the sea then.
Oh, that's not a bad shot, actually. Yeah,
that would look very cool.
I haven't thought about that. I might try that. Excellent. I might even do some hobby stuff. Look at this. Well, oh no,
it's a bit scary. I'm glad I'm sitting down.
Everyone, calm down. Yeah. Oz is getting all excited about his union stuff as well. He's getting cracking on about all the bits. He's looking at getting some resin bases, and yeah, it's both of us have suddenly just been energized again, because, you know, I love Malifaux, and so does Oz loves it, but I know he, out of the two of us, does get the most sort of fatigue from it, and he really wants another game system to play. And with 40k and fantasy changing around and stuff, he's kind of like, well, I'll put money into that, and I don't really want to put more money into that at this stage. So this is like back to ages ago, and it's like, I've gone like, yeah, I'm definitely going to play with this. And he's like, well, wicked, let's both crack on with it.
Yeah, that's why I was playing a completely different game this evening before we started recording, just to get out that sort of thing. I'll bring mine down at the weekend when I see you.
Fantastic.
And can have a look and see what they're like. So we're well over time.
Oh, sorry. I do apologize.
No. It's been awesome. So thanks for coming on.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me.
I'll have you again, I think.
Oh, excellent. That sounds good.
But until next time, I've been Mike.
I've been Ben.
Oh, look at that! We'll speak to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you much. Bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.